The following programming is sponsored by Pete Trabuco. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
And welcome to another edition of Live on Tape with Pete Trabuco on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio. Good afternoon, 2 o'clock here on a beautiful, beautiful Saturday afternoon with, of course, Tyler Conklin, myself, and of course, our guest co-host, Yuron Urbas is on the phone as well. And it's getting pretty close to Christmas, less than 2 weeks away, folks. Hope you're getting all your gifts together. And the big thing right now, I just came off Philly 17, which is the TV station, the CW network TV station, yesterday. And I spent 15 minutes on with the morning crew talking about those drones. All the drones that are flying around like crazy. And I got to admit, I mean, just getting here, I left early this morning in order to get here to prepare for some of the shows that we're doing. And I saw drones. I saw drones yesterday, the day before. Now, I'm a pilot, so I know the difference between a drone and an aircraft or a helicopter. Okay, so I'm telling you, it's crazy. And we were talking about that on Philly 17. That's the CW network here in Philadelphia. Tyler, have you been seeing those? Because I know I have.
Haven't seen a one.
Not a one? You've not looked up into the sky?
I'm inside all day. When am I going to get the chance to look for helicopters or planes or drones or anything like that?
You know, I was that way until I'm in rehearsal for a show, basically, at the college, Tarzan. And I had to go there. I had to go all the way to do the morning show, which is 6:45, 8 o'clock, two sessions. And I had to drive all the way to Philadelphia from where I was at Mercer County College. And the bottom line is I saw about 7 or 8 of them in the air, 7 or 8 of them in the air, not just one, 7 or 8. So there's a definite issue. And of course, it's happening not just here, California, Texas. You've had them in the UK right now. It seems to be getting bigger and bigger, and people just can't understand what's going on there.
Are you sure you didn't see the same one 7 or 8 times?
I wish that was true, but it's not. How about you, Yaron? How about you? Have you seen any?
You know, I haven't seen any personally, but didn't one of them actually crash land?
That's
right. In Jersey?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Yes, it did. And it was on all the news right now. They're all trying to figure out, scratching their head, trying to figure out, you know, what the situation is. And it's absolutely, it's incredible.
I mean, I think they did say it didn't seem like it was military grade. It seemed like it was sort of, you know, what would be accessible to sort of the average person. But then even more crazy, what's up with these, like, the Iranian ships offshores or something? Iranian drone ships or something?
Yeah,
what
no.
is going on?
Well, that's kind of been disproven a little bit, but we'd never know. And again, being a certified FAA, and you've got to get a Part 107 license in order to actually fly a commercial drone. They're not easy to get, and the FAA keeps track of all that stuff. So it's incredible. It's absolutely an incredible story. It's continuing. They want me back on in the morning show on Monday to talk more about this, and it's just an interesting situation. Now, since you are my co-host today, Yaron, okay?
Yes.
I would like you to do the introduction. We have a fantastic guest, but I'd like you to do the introduction on our guest today, who I have been following since probably around 1987 and 88 when he did the Wonder Years and was the father in the Wonder Years, as well as Independence Day. I mean, he's done pretty much everything. And just recently, Reagan, which was the movie out. We'll talk more about that, but do the introduction. Go ahead, Yaron.
Absolutely. It's an absolute honor. Dan Loria. Dan's been in everything. I mean, we all know the Wonder Years, you know, just iconic, or late 80s, early 90s. But so many other shows that Dan has done, you know, that are well known. I mean, most recently, definitely Reagan. But I mean, on and on and on. There was a show called Pitch, a show called Sullivan and Son that he was a series regular on. Plus all the other shows that he's had awesome parts in, The Good Doctor, Fantasy Island, which was out there for a minute, The Goldbergs, and it goes on and on, and we'll talk more about all that. But he's also just got so many interesting stories. Dan, I know you're out there. You know, we want to welcome you over here.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You know,
thank
all
you so
my
much for taking the time.
Yeah. Oh, that long resume you're doing, it's a nice way of saying how old I am, but I appreciate it.
Listen, Dan, like I said, I've been a big follower of yours. The year that the Wonder Years came out, and the time frame that you actually were filming this was obviously much earlier. I was that age. Okay, I was the Wonder Year kid. Okay, and you were kind of like my dad in a lot of ways. So it was a fantastic story. Loved it. But since then, I mean, everywhere I go, I end up seeing you. One of my favorite, and we talked about Independence Day and all you those. My favorite, I don't know if you know this, but I interview a lot of astronauts. I've been in the sim with those guys. I'm a pilot myself, and I've done a whole bunch of stuff, but I'm really into the Apollo program was a big thing, and the space shuttle program. And I know that From the Earth to the Moon was a fantastic series by Tom Hanks, and he did an amazing job. But you were on that screen; you were there, and I know you were in charge of you were like the president of NASA, and basically you had to make it all happen. You know, when Kennedy said, you know, listen, we're going to go to the moon before the end of the century or the end of the decade, you had to make that happen. So I was very impressed by your performance.
The best thing about that, though, was the two episodes I did, Tom Hanks directed them. So
yes.
I got to, you hear all these stories about how nice Tom Hanks is. And in reality, he's even nicer.
Really?
So one of the, that's one thing about Hollywood. The public hears all the bad stories, but they don't hear the good stories. Tom Hanks is just a true gentleman and a really creative soul who, on that project, he was adamant about everything being accurate, that everything we said was taken from journals and logs that were. So it was a pleasure to work on that. And it did well.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, it did. You got a question?
It's wonderful to hear that Tom. Tom Hanks is definitely one of those actors that I've heard only good things about for sure. And Dan, by the way, you too. I've always only heard good things about you, Dan. And being an actor myself for over 17 years, I mean, I'm always lucky enough to talk to different people, and you know. The dad that we see on TV in the Wonder Years is, especially when I first met you.
Yeah, but that's a tribute to the Bob Brush and Neil Marlins and Carol Black who created it. Bob Brush, who was our head writer for most of those shows. It was interesting because the L.A. Times, on a Father's Day, they had a thing in the paper, which TV dad would you most like to have as your dad? And I wasn't even on the list. And 2 years later, they had a concert, which TV dad was most like the dad you had? And I was number one. So nobody wanted me, but everybody had me. So when it came down.
You just latched on. So you played Jack Arnold. That was the dad.
That's right.
And you start with Fred Savage. How did it start? What was the audition like? Did they instantly know they wanted you? What was that process like for you?
Well, I never had a big agent. So I had done two guest spots on Growing Pains.
Uh-huh.
And Neil Martin and Black were the writers on that show, and Neil and I, we really got along well because we were both from Long Island, and when I was younger, Lindenhurst, where I went, was the big dogs in sports, and when he went to South Huntington, he was younger than I was, they were the big dogs, so we were always teasing each other. And then when the Wonder Years came, I couldn't get an audition, and it was Joanna Kearns who played the mother on Growing Pains.
Yeah.
She said, did you get Neil's show? And I said, I can't get in. And she said, are you kidding? Neil loves you. So she called the casting director, who was the same for both shows. And the casting director mentioned my name to Neil. And he said, oh, of course, out of sight, out of mind. But then when you heard my name, of course, he'd be perfect. So I went in And the network didn't want me. They wanted Elliot Gould. They wanted one movie star at least. But the writers kept insisting that we wanted to look, we don't want anybody who's been around that much. We want to look like the people next door. So, you know, I auditioned and I auditioned. I must have went back 10 times. And then finally you go to the network, and I thought Neil was going to kill me. I had a great audition. As I'm walking out, somebody from the network, they're up in the bleachers in the dark. You can't see them. They try to make it so dramatic, you know?
Yeah.
And but he yelled out, "You realize this is a wonderful role." And I said, "No, Richard III's a wonderful role. This is a lot of fun." And Neil said,
"That's,
so,
yeah.
You know, I was always a little bit of a wise ass that way. You know, my attitude was, what are you going to do, shave my head and send me back to Nam? I'm fine, you know, whatever.
I tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah. We were a hit away. I didn't, you know, our... Matter of fact, they changed the rules for the Emmy because we won Best Show after only having 6 shows on the air.
Uh-huh.
And they changed it. I think you have to have 12 on the air now before you're eligible for Best Show. But we premiered right after the Super Bowl, and they said, well, you'll never get the ratings next week. And we actually had higher ratings the next week than we did after the Super Bowl. So we were number one show for 2 years, and they moved our time slot, and we were never beyond the top 30 shows. And when we were canceled, we were 27 out of 166 shows, and we were canceled.
Yeah, and that was 6 seasons too. You did 6 full seasons.
We won one more. So the show, it was always intended for the show to end with Fred graduating high school, and we ended in a junior year. And they didn't tell us it was going to be the end. So the writers had to put in all that narration at the very last show, which was what you would have seen in the next year, basically. So that was Hollywood. We were canceled because of one man, Ronald Perlman, not the actor, who's my good friend, but the on Revlon. I don't care who hears it, but he bought our company. They sold off everything but the Wonder Years, and he was, exact quote, "The amount of profit does not warrant another season."
Wow.
I always said, we're in a room with him, only one of us is coming out, and I wouldn't bet on him.
You know, but you know something? I remember the final. In fact, I remember the final episode, you know, like it was yesterday. And I was so hoping that they would, you know, when he would they get together at the very end. And unfortunately, they did not. So that was something. And I believe they also mentioned that your character, unfortunately, had a heart attack.
Neil Marlins' dad was rather young. They were playing tennis, and he had a massive heart attack while they were playing tennis.
It reminds me of Young Sheldon, which is a big thing now, where of course the father dies, and it's like it takes you for a loop. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, we and again, like that character, we loved you. We loved you as the father, and basically when we heard that, we're like, oh, you know, and then it didn't end up with, they didn't end up together. So yeah, it was a sweet, I guess, but sad ending to a show that I love to watch. So anyway, we're going to be back with Live on Tape and a few messages right after this. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
They came from every corner of the country, from small towns and big cities. But they all shared one thing in common. They belonged to a family called Marines. A tough and determined few, dedicated to protecting everything we hold sacred. And still, they come. celebrate the history of those proud few who have earned the title Marine.
And hello, everybody. Welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco, WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Pete Tribuco here with Tyler Conklin as a producer. And, of course, we got Yaron Urbas, who is also a co-host. But before we get back to our guest, I want to talk about World Star Public Relations, where excellence meets exposure. Now, are you ready to elevate your brand to new heights? Well, their team of dynamic public relations experts is here to make your story shine bright on the global stage. Whether you're a startup, an established artist, business, or a rising star, they specialize in crafting narratives and captivate and those campaigns that really resonate. So World Star Public Relations, your passport to the world of unparalleled visibility and success. So join the ranks today, 631-506-6600. That is 631-506-6600. And we are with an amazing actor who I followed since the last century. That makes me really old, Tyler, the way I say it. But obviously, the Wonder Years, Independence Day, Reagan, The Good Doctor, Fantasy Island. I can go on and on. The Goldbergs. You've seen him everywhere. MacGyver. It's just an amazing situation that we have this incredible guest who I've been following for many years. And Dan Lauria, how are you doing today, sir? Do you have your Christmas shopping done yet?
Oh, yeah, I do it all by mail. I don't go into the stores anymore. So take advantage of shopping online, you know.
How about you, Yaron? What are you doing?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to be spending as much time as I possibly can with my kids, my three children.
Oh, fantastic!
And yeah, we're still getting the shopping done, and we're a mixed family, so we got some Jewish and got some Christian, nice beautiful little mix.
That's something else. Now me, I do it a little bit different. What I do basically is I go to the store the day before Christmas. And I go to certain aisles, the toy aisle, this electronics aisle, whatever. And I just flop everything into my basket. I just throw it in there, like, you know, one of those, one of these, you know, kind of like that supermarket shop show that used to just grab all the stuff and do stuff along those lines. And then later on, I try to figure out who I'm giving what to. Okay, so that's pretty much how I do it. So we've been talking about the Wonder Years, and I want to elaborate on that. That it was six seasons. It did 140 something episodes or whatever that was. It was a great show, and of course, unfortunately, our better shows, the best shows, get canceled. Like for example, the show now, which is. I guess it's the police show that just got canceled. After how many seasons was it? 16?
Are we thinking blue?
Blue Bloods. Yes, Blue Bloods.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know if they were canceled. I just think it was they ran out of, you know, the shows, and you know Tom's not the youngest guy in the world.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he's another guy that's great to work with. A real pro. Yeah.
Wow.
I did a couple. So I always like working with Tom. You know, we might disagree politically, but when it comes to work, he's a real pro. You know,
I loved him in Magnum PI.
Yes, definitely.
You know, he was so iconic. I mean, obviously, so much other work as well. But and then the reboot as well, I find kind of interesting. I have a friend who's on there as well, and he's actually the helicopter pilot.
Oh, really? Hell.
Yeah.
I was just watching that yesterday. You know, but I have a hard time with Higgins being a woman, you know? it just doesn't work for me for whatever reason. I just wait a minute, that's not right. You know, on the reboot. So
not accepting it.
Yeah, you know, reboot, try something new. I mean it's, you know, when you have a character fixed in your head a certain way, it's kind of takes time to, you know, it's interesting, you know, Dan, you know, a good segue about talking about sort of, you know, yes, you know, we're dealing with a lot of changes in modern society now. And you did a show called Pitch, where you played a football coach.
Feel disappointed when they canceled that. I still feel that if Hillary had won, they wouldn't have canceled it. We did very well. We were opposite Thursday night football. And, you know, we got killed in the ratings when we first went on. And then every week it built and built and built. And finally they started realizing wives were telling their husbands, you can watch the second half of the football game. We're watching Pitch. And then our audience, when we got canceled, we were shocked. Plus, Dan Fogelman, who wrote it, who, you know, he wrote This Is Us and Murder in the Apartment Now, he was shocked too. So, I don't know. There was, again, the politics of the networks and studios. Nobody came to me and said, what do you think? So, mm-hmm. I did another sports show called Hoop Life.
That's right.
And we were on Sunday nights, and there was one time we were literally the last show on all of cable television. But they reran it on Tuesday nights, and we would win the night, win it not only for Showtime, but sometime for the every cable channel. So I said, well, this is a no-brainer. Next year we come back on Tuesday night, and they rerun it some other time. We did so badly on Sunday, we were opposite The Sopranos.
Oh.
They canceled the show. Our ratings. I said, and you get paid to make decisions? What are you, nuts? Just put us on Tuesday night. Ratings there. But, hey, listen, they don't ask actors, so what can I
say? No, it's amazing. You know, for folks out there that don't know about Pitch, I mean, basically centered around this young woman who becomes the first female major league pitcher in baseball. And the struggles, and Dan, you play the coach on the team, and you play a lot of coaches. I mean, it's natural to your brand, the characters you tend to play. Like you played Lombardi on Broadway, for example. That must have been an amazing experience.
That was great for an old jock like me to have all those old Green Bay Packers. Every Thursday night, we'd have a talk back, and you know, Jim Taylor was there, and Horning was there, Frank Gifford was there, and one night, you know, the opening speech is the speech Lombardi gave, the first speech he gave to the Packers. And the theater was in the round, so you actually used the audience as the team. And one night it was Hank Aaron, Frank Robinson, and sitting between them was my old friend Yogi Berra. And in the speech, I had to say, we're going to be the Yankees of professional football. And I looked right at Yogi when I said it. And afterwards, they came backstage, and Hank Aaron grabbed me and said, I'm glad you didn't say Yankees again. Yogi almost killed us. He was elbowing. So it was a great experience, you know, meeting all those great athletes, you know.
I tell you one thing. The one thing that really would have interested me was the fact that you're meeting all these people, Tom Hanks, and I just go on in the list of people that you've met. And you're if I met you, basically, I do get a little starstruck. And if I did meet you, obviously, it would be something else. Because even if you're a lot of celebrities, boxers, sports figures, football players, baseball players, athletes, movie stars, as well as people that basically go into space, you know, astronauts. I think it must be something. Did you ever get starstruck when you were with like people like that? I mean, you're on their level, obviously, but still, I mean, you're in the room with these individuals and you're like, wow, I can't believe I'm actually doing this. Did that ever happen to you?
Well, of course, but I was lucky from day one in the city. My mentor was Charles Durning, the great actor.
Oh, yeah.
And when I got the Wonder Years, the first thing I did, Charlie made me produce some plays, and one of them was The Bronx Tale. De Niro's company bought it from me.
Okay.
And I didn't want to keep doing that, so Charlie and I started a reading program where every Monday night we read a new play to help writers get literary agents. And it caught on, so I had all these major actors reading all the time, and some of us became, like, I was very close to Jack Klugman and Peter Falk and Dom DeLuise and Charlie. We'd all go to dinner a lot. We'd go to dinner at least once a month.
I am so jealous. Continue.
Yeah, but my point is that you don't get starstruck once you know the people. You know, like Joe Montaigne is a good friend of mine. And Joe may be, you know, he's like a Tom Hanks. He's just the nicest guy in the world. I do a lecture at colleges, and I always end it with my business is like anybody else's business. 15% of the people I work with are total asses.
Ooh.
I don't want anything to do. You like them, I wouldn't like them. 85% of them are the nicest people in the world who are trying, regardless of what the material is, we are trying our best to give the public their money's worth. But unfortunately, in our business, we promote the 15%. We don't promote the 85%. So, and if the one actress who I was always a little starstruck with was Jenna Rollins. I got to know her well. But whenever I was in her presence, I was always like, oh, she's the best.
That's wonderful. You know, let's turn back a little bit. If you don't mind, let's go to the beginning. You know, you served in the military. You served in the Marines, Dan?
Yes.
Thank you for your service.
Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, brother.
Semper Fi.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you for your service, Dan. You know, talk about your early beginnings. You know, how did you get into acting? Was it a natural thing? Was it something you knew you wanted from a very early stage, or did you fall into it? What was that like for you?
No, when I was younger, I had an aunt, my Aunt Adele. She lived with us for a while, and I'd come home from practice, and while I'm eating, she'd say, go to bed. And I'd go to bed real early, and at 2 in the morning, she'd wake me up and go, James Cagney. And we'd watch The Late Late Show. So I always loved these old movies. And then when I went to college, all I wanted to do was play football and be a coach. And telling a joke on the field one day before practice, and a little old lady came over and said, would you like to be in a play? And I said, you know, I always wanted to try that. She said, I know. I said, how would you know? She said, because I'm the greatest acting teacher in the world. And it was Constance Welch, who actually started the Yale Dramat. And she needed a big, ugly guy to play Caliban. And I did one play, and I said, you know, if you coach, you're on the sidelines. But if you're an actor, you're still in the game. And I made up my mind even before I went in the service after undergraduate school that that's what I was going to do when I came out. And while I was in the service, she would send me plays. And she said, oh, you remind me of some of my other students. They were Marines, too, and she meant James Whitmore. So whenever I ran into James Whitmore, we would talk about Constance Welch. And then after the service, again, I had a chance to go to University of Iowa as a graduate assistant and coach linebackers. And just before I was going to go, I got a grant from UConn for my MFA in playwriting. So then I went there, and then I went into the city. And luckily, I had Charles Durning with me from day one. And he told me, you ever go a year without doing a play, I'll never speak to you again. And I never did. Neither did he. Even during COVID, I never went a year without doing a play. So,
would you say you have a natural preference towards theater?
Oh, always.
Versus like television?
I hate what they're doing now with all this cut, all this editing. Half of acting is listening. I haven't seen anybody listen in 15 years. You know, you can go to a movie like Oppenheimer, one best editing. I think the longest take with two actors in the same frame talking to each other is 12 seconds.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, that's part of my lecture at colleges.
But you know something? Remember 1918, that movie that just came out, a couple of years ago, where they didn't stop filming?
That was like Rope, Hitchcock's Rope. I'm not advocating that, but I'm advocating that when you have a close-up, it should mean something.
Okay.
And it means nothing. Everything is one close-up after another.
Yeah, so. I gotcha.
I think, you know, it's funny. I have shared with my kids all the movies I grew up with. I remember having them watch Karate Kid, where we hold a shot. It was a beautiful scene with Miyagi Daniel-san, right? And he's right, and they're holding the shot for way longer than they would nowadays. And my kids are engrossed. It was a beautiful scene, and it's interesting though because I mean I think the reason we cut faster and edit it without getting overly detailed is attention spans are shrinking. You know, people don't have it, or younger people.
let you say that. That's their excuse. These kids can stay for 12 hours on a computer and not move. That's the network's excuse. It's not about attention span. I'll tell you right now, your kid, and put on a Requiem for Heavyweight with Anthony Quinn, Jackie Gleason, Rooney, and Julie Harris. 10 minutes into it, tell them, look, I know it's black and white. You guys don't like that. I'll shut it off. I'll bet you they won't let you.
No, that's true. They wouldn't. Yeah. Listen.
The good story is a good story.
I'd like to pick this up again. We have to go to break, so we'll be back with actor Dan Lauria right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeHack can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push, and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeHack in your home or office. Please visit LifeHack.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEHACK.
Black men are the most likely Americans to die from lung cancer. And black people develop the disease earlier in life than others. Federal guidelines have nearly doubled the number of black Americans eligible for lung cancer screening. Insurance companies are required to cover these tests for those ages 50 to 80 who smoke or used to smoke. If that's you, talk to a doctor about lung cancer screening. For more information and to find a screening center near you, visit acr.org/myLCS. That's acr.org/myLCS.
And welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Buco, WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everybody. We got, the Christmas is right around the corner, and we are talking with an amazing actor who played Jack Arnold in The Wonder Years, in addition to doing a number of other things. I could be here for 20 minutes going over all the different roles that this individual had. You know, From the Earth to the Moon is one of my favorite. But, you know, Independence Day, for example, and I could go over all these different movies. There's just so many and different television shows that he has appeared on. We are so, so happy to have him here with, of course, my co-host, Yaron Urbos, who's happened to be, unfortunately, not in the studio today. But we needed him on because, let's face it, he's an actor himself who has been on this show as well. So, Yaron, how are you doing at this point, sir?
I am doing fantastic. I am warm, which is the most important thing right now. It's kind of cold outside. And I'm just, honestly, personally, man, I'm just enjoying talking to a legend, you know, a man whose work, you know, Dan.
He is.
You know,
all
of our father, you know, growing up. I mean, just, I could never, you know, the way I live my life sometimes, you know, I like to think about what's happening now and look back at the past. So, for example, if I could imagine myself talking to myself, watching The Wonder Years as a child and looking at you know, Dan, you know, watching you on screen, man, and then thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to meet this guy someday. I'm going to talk to him. It's amazing. So anyway, that's where my head is right now. So thanks for asking, man.
Not a problem. Well, listen, another one of my favorites, and obviously we all know Independence Day, obviously, Will Smith. And, of course, just a fantastic cast. And, you know, it's funny. I watched it the first time, and all of a sudden, you popped on the screen there, okay? And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. Did you think that Independence Day, when you were filming that, was going to be a blockbuster the way it ended up turning out?
No, not at all. Not at all. But, you know, that's not my kind of movie. For me, the best part of that movie is I got to work with Robert Loggia, who is one of my favorite actors and was a dear friend of my mentor, Charles Durning. Matter of fact, I was on the set talking with Robert, and I mentioned Charlie. He was, oh, how's Charlie doing? I called Charlie, and Charlie came over and had lunch. And, of course, I was the audience while the two of them told stories from, you know, working with Joe Papp down at the Public Theater. So my memories of that movie are not the movie itself, but with the people I worked with. Of course, I had other friends in it too. Judd Hirsch was a good friend of mine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was an interesting movie. I'm not crazy about the remake that was done. It lost a little of its luster by doing that. But I'm looking, I'm seeing MVP here. That's a movie, MVP. Now you were also in that as well. That was on the athletes and the veterans getting together and forming an alliance.
Yeah.
Yes, I actually had the director on the show maybe a couple months ago. What was that like? I mean, because you're a military veteran, okay, and you can see what was going on there. Were you involved in any of those MVP programs?
Well, you know, of course, I did that movie. We did it out in New Jersey. And, you know, whenever I do anything to promote things for the veterans, I do. Like for the Marine Corps, you'll hear a commercial every once in a while for Toys for Tots. That's my voice, you know. And my company commander when I was in the service became four-star General Carlton Fulford, one of the nicest and kindest and most wonderful people I've ever met. So whenever he calls, he still comes to my place, you know, and Sergeant Schmidt, my platoon sergeant. So I try to stay as active with the military as I can, you know. I mean, that's where all politics ends when it comes to the service, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually have some Marine references in the things I write also, so.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you tried directing at all? Have you tried directing at this point?
Well, I want to, you know, they have those shirts. A lot of actors have it says, what I really want to do is direct. I have a shirt that says, no, I don't want to direct. And under it in little letters, I can't stand actors. You know? I direct on stage. I don't really, when I do my lecture at colleges, I tell the directors, if you listen to me, you'll be a much better director, but you'll never work again. Because I don't believe directors should just fill an editing machine. And that's what's happened to most of the movies I see. It's and again, I don't think it has anything to do with attention span. It has to do with what it always had to do, even going back to silent movies. It's power. And now the studios and the networks own the editing machine. They don't have to sit there with an editor and do the old thing, you know, like Spielberg did for years, even when he didn't have to, because you listen to his lectures about making films, it was telling stories. You can't tell a story by cutting on every line. You know, it's the reason why you can watch an old movie over and over again, like It's a Wonderful Life every Christmas. You'll always cry because you're from your couch brought into Bedford Falls. But if I'm going to cut on every line, you know, your mind is clicking and you're constantly reminded that you're not in the space where the movie is. Subliminally, you're detached. And it takes no talent, I think, to direct today. You have to be a mechanic. You don't have to be you don't have to be Billy Wilder anymore or people who told stories. And that's why when you get, I always have young kids over to watch old movies. And a lot of times they go, oh, another black and white. And then as soon as it starts, they won't move. Like I said, show them Requiem for a Heavyweight. I guarantee you when it's over, there won't be a dry eye in the house.
So, you know, in that line of thinking, as far as the industry, you've been in the industry for quite some time. So outside of editing, just in general, you know, what else has sort of changed since you started
The
comparison to now?
The worst thing that's happened is self-tapes. And the young kids don't realize what it is to go into a room and audition. It's one of the reasons why I left Hollywood and moved back to New York. I was on a committee about self-taping, and I don't know why actors with 40, 50 years in the business have to self-tape while they have offers out to a bigger name and a bigger agency, and they don't have to self-tape. You're like forcing me to buy a raffle ticket for a raffle that's already rigged. Now, the last four jobs that they called and said, oh, you had the best tape, they called putting a pin in you, it means you're on hold. And all four of those roles were given to actors, great actors, wonderful friends of mine, Bo Bridges and F. Murray Abraham, people I've worked with. I totally understand why they offered it, but why did you make 30 of us self-tape when you've got all this footage for the last 50 years? So, you know, you want to dump on my career, fine, but don't ask me to dump on it, too. You know, you look at our reel, look at our disc. The last show I got hired, I asked, there was no self-tape, no audition. They just hired me, and I asked, I thanked the director I had worked with five times. He goes, yeah, the character said old Marine, I thought about you. And I asked him, did they have self-tape for this part? And the director said, I don't know. 2 days later, he goes, there were 30 self-tapes here. And I said, I bet you knew every one of them. And he said, yeah, it was everybody who was ever on a show. You know, great actors like Joe Spano and Bill Smitrovich and, you know, Sam McMurray. You've got people you would recognize. And I said to the director, be honest, any one of us could have done this. And he said, yeah, I just saw old Marine. I thought of you. And the producer said, oh, Dan, yeah, sure, he's fine. And to make those 30 actors self-tape, it's so insulting. And it would never. The old days we went in, you remember, Ron, we went in.
Mm-hmm.
You
auditioned. Oh, yeah.
And even if you nailed it, good director might say, that was great. Try it this way. Because they just wanted to see if you would take notes. And how many times you went in, didn't get the job, but 2 months later, the same show called you back, said, oh, we loved your last tape, your last audition. You were just too ugly. Now we got a perfect part for you, you know. So gone, and the young kids don't realize it because half of them are coming out of college never having done a play, never having sustained a character, and they've made 10-minute movies, which are cut on their every line anyway. I'm always judging at these film festivals, and the first thing I look for is somebody who tells the story instead of fills an editing machine. So if you ask me what's changed, that self-tape thing, I think, really, it's much harder for the younger kids than it was for us.
I'd agree.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. We've had a lot of actors on this show. You know, basically people who have been in movies and even blockbusters. And I've asked that question a lot. And you, with COVID, obviously, you really had to do the self tapes. You really couldn't go in the studio. And that the industry has definitely changed, where it's a lot more self tapes than actually being in front of people. And just getting that whole, you know, three-dimensional type of an atmosphere. I'm glad to hear that you said that, Dan, because I'll tell you, I feel your way. I mean, I've done some acting, not a lot. I mean, I've done some independent movies, and I'm going to be doing Tarzan over at the college for basically a musical. I love doing it. I love doing theater more, but I don't like the self-tapes. I prefer actually going in, and you're like the first person, the first actor or actress that's actually told me that. So kudos to you, sir. Definitely.
Oh, it is so obvious. And the casting directors will totally agree with me. Pat McCorkle is one of the best, does a lot of theater too. She talked to the people on the self-tape committee, and she had a great thing. She said, you know, in the old days, I'd see a lot of actors. I'd narrow it down for 10. We'd have a callback, and there would always be a producer, the director, and the writer in the room. And she said, my job then became, I was the actor's agent. So Ron leaves the room, and she said, okay, next you're going to see Dan Laurier. I saw him do this. I saw him do that, I think. And she said, a lot of times I'd go and tell the people, listen, the next person you're going to see is not who you want. I know it. But I want you to see this person because I know you're going to use them with things that are coming up. All that's gone with self-tape. Yeah. You don't have it. Loves telling the story. She brought me in for, she said, I brought Dan in. I saw him play Al Capone off Broadway. And I brought him in for a gangster. And while the audition was going on, the phone on my desk rang. And Dan, in the middle of a line, ran over, picked up the phone, and went, not now, slammed it down, and went on with the audition. She said, we were afraid not to hire him. None of that can happen. Self-tape. There is no communication. And they're paying for it because you get some young person who's technically proficient in making a self-tape, you get them on the set, and they can't do more than two lines at a time.
Wow.
So the equipment is better. It's more efficient. It's lighter. We need less crew people. And we're taking twice as long because we're covering everything from every other angle in the world. We even have writers asking that every line be on a single. That's ridiculous. How about let's do what you intended in the scene? Let's not fill a machine. Then you can make up what we need later.
Wow, that's great.
We'll fix it in post. Worst thing you can hear.
Listen, we're going to be back with Dan Loria right after these messages.
Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
This is a St. Jude moment.
Ashton was a high-level athlete, and in an instant, your world flips, and your healthy 5-year-old competitive cheerleader has a brain tumor. And the physician was like, your best option is St. Jude. Receiving treatment that was life-saving for our child and knowing that that treatment would be of no cost to us was a huge weight lifted.
Learn more at stjude.org.
And hello and good afternoon here out of Philadelphia, WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio. And I'm here, of course, Pete Tribuco, live on tape with Tyler Conklin. And we've got Yaron Urbas, who basically is our co-host. Unfortunately, couldn't make it to the studio today, but we have him on as well. We are talking with an established actor. You might remember him as Jack Arnold from The Wonder Years. That ran from 88 to 93, but he's still doing things. In fact, looking at the schedule, it's looking like 213 different shows, movies, whatever you want to call it. So I can't go over all of them. I mean, obviously Independence Day, I can go over The Good Doctor, I can go Fantasy Island, I can go MVP, I can go The Goldbergs, I can just keep going. It'll take me 20 minutes to go through 213 different credits. So, Dan, that must be incredible that you can look back and say, I did all that stuff.
Yeah, well, that doesn't count the plays.
That's right.
Done over 6 plays, so I rather count that. So, you know, the theater is where it's really at.
Are you ever going to be in Philadelphia? We want to see you.
Well, I had a play up just a few months ago, which got published, and I did it with Patty McCormick. You remember The Bad Seed?
Oh, yeah.
She's almost 80 now. And, you know, we're trying to get it. We're going to do New Jersey, and we're definitely going to go out to L.A., so maybe we can get it to Philadelphia.
Well, New Jersey's close enough.
I got to see it. I want to put it out there. I got to see it. It was amazing. You wrote it, right? Is that correct, Dan? Yeah. You wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about it a little
yes,
bit?
Yes, please,
I mean,
please.
It covers dementia. Do you want to get into it? What inspired you?
It's basically about two old comedy writers who have dementia. So every day they meet, they write comedy, and they fall in love. So now you don't have to go see it. You know the whole play.
No, it was so much richer. What's the title again?
Just Another Day. But it's
just
one of those
another day.
Plays. Hopefully we make you have a few belly laughs, and then like The Wonder Years, you'll have a little tear once in a while.
Well, that's just it. I think you hit it on it. As someone who's seen it, I mean, yeah, you cover a pretty intense, deep topic, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, you know, our memories, who are we? And yes, there were a lot of great moments where, you know, comedy is often where you want when it comes to like dark moments, right? Comedy is that release, you know, especially when we're talking about difficult things. And I think you definitely, the writing was great. I was really impressed. Made you, you know, it's a hard piece to write. I mean, what inspired you to do it?
I had an old friend of mine whose father was also a good friend of mine, has you know, dementia and is in a home. And, you know, when I go see him, he doesn't really remember me. But if we start talking about the Yankees, he goes right back to seeing. When I was a kid, I saw Babe Ruth, and he'll tell you all the batting averages. Then he works his way up. And
wow.
Then after a while, he'll go, hey, Dan, how are you? You know? And so what I did was just substitute old movies. These people are lost, and then they start, one line leads to a joke, and then they realize they're right, and they start writing comedy, and you realize they were comedy writers in another life. So, and it's the old movies that whenever something goes wrong, will say a line like, ain't that the truth, the awful truth, and the girl will go, awful truth. It's Cary Grant and Irene Dunne, and they old movies bring him back to a happier place. So, you know, it's partly what Charles Durning taught me about, you know, the greatest acting lesson is watching old movies when they didn't cut every 2 seconds, you know, mm-hmm. and I still believe mm-hmm. that.
So what was Charles Durning like? What was he like? It seems like he was your mentor. How did you meet him?
It was amazing to go to dinner with Jack and Klugman and Peter Falk, who were the two hardest working actors I've ever
seen. Columbo.
Yeah, yeah. Peter would, Dan, is it funnier if I move the cup here? Or should I move it here? Pete, just move the cup, will you? And one night, Charles Durning said to he said, Pete, if acting was that hard, Dan and I wouldn't do it, you know? So they were so, they came from opposite places. Jack was the same way. I mean, Jack Klugman, they took out a vocal cord. They told him he'd never speak again. And 2 years later, he's back on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, had a voice that was gruff, but you heard every word. And I did 3 plays with Jack. I did 1 with Peter. I did 3 with Charlie. And that's not counting the readings of plays we did. And to be on stage with those guys was, it was never about good or bad. It was always about choices.
Uh-huh.
You know, I love that you made about this. Well, you know, what made you think of that, you know? And Charlie was the greatest thief I've ever seen. He'd watch an old movie every day, and he would rob things and put them in the movie. I remember doing a bit one day. I said, Charlie, wait till you see this play. I got a bit in the second act. I'm bringing down the house. So he came to the play, and when it was over, he came over to me and went, Edgar Buchanan, 1937, in the Marx Brothers.
Uh-huh.
And I went, it was the same bit I did. He goes, there's nothing new. It's how you use it. You know. And he would always put his little thing, even in the sting, when they come to him at the diner, the FBI guys, and say, you got to come with us. As he gets up, he dips his fingers into his glass of water to clean his fingers. It's a cute little bit. And then he showed me an old movie where he saw, I can't remember. Edmund O'Brien did that in a movie. And he would know all these things. And so you learn how to watch and take choices and use them, put them in things. And then they become, you become so relaxed with them that it actually becomes part of the character, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great listening to those and working with them on stage. They're always looking for a better way to do it.
That's great. So, Dan, we got about 3 minutes left, best 2.5 to 3 minutes left. Now, we talked about your play. Can you give us websites and basically what's happening? What's new? I know you just did Reagan not too long ago, the movie, which I saw was incredible. It was a great movie. What's in the future? What's in the future?
Well, again, I'm going to be doing my play, and then I have another new play I'm working on that in February we're reading at the Actors Studio. You know, I have no idea. I'm not a writer who acts. I'm an actor who writes. So it's a big difference. One is I don't mind rewriting, but I really don't like my own writing. It takes me forever to finish. I always go to bed. I write something. I go to bed thinking that I'm Eugene O'Neill. And then I wake up in the morning and I read it, and it's more like Joe Chagas wrote it. I wrote it. So Charlie taught me to be, you really have to be objective if you want to keep moving forward as an artist. You know, everybody thinks they're good. Everybody thinks they're wonderful. Oh, I'm a great actor. I'm a great writer. But if you study enough things from the past, you realize you have a long way to go. You know, I have a long way to go before I get. As a matter of fact, Charlie Durney, who saw everything I ever did, he always put his arm around me and go, "All right, another 20 years, you'll be an actor." And then I met Jack Klugman, and Charlie was very moved by it. And he came over to me, put his arm around me, said, "All right, another 10 years, you'll be an actor." And I thought I wanted to get out. This is great. I'm getting better, you know. But and then Jack Klugman said, "Charlie, are you an actor yet?" And Charles Charlie put his finger.
Well, listen, thank you so much for being on this on the show with us. We're running out of time. We've had actor Dan Lurie on. Thank you again. And we'll talk to you live on tape with Pete Tribuco again next week. Have a great day. And, well, Christmas is right around the corner, so we'll see you then.
Take care.
Bye-bye.